Welcome to the Birth People podcast. Today we are interviewing the deans. I will let them give their own introductions and we'll jump right into an interview today.
Okay, well, I am Christina and this is my handsome husband, Gabriel. We are people of transparency and intimacy and freedom and thinking outside the box. And that's how we came together, was we were both people who very much appreciate sort of liberation and freedom within ourselves and freedom inside of the context of our relationship, and just the decisions that we make are sort of always based on staying really true to ourselves, and which is why we're free birthers, which is why we're here with you.
Yes.
This birthing podcast. Free birthers, you know, where we choose to birth at home, just Gabriel and I, you know, and a tub, because that's the path we chose every time. So we moved from LA to Hill Country, Texas, and it was a huge shift, right, babe? We ended up on this sort of 5-acre property, coming from a condo in the middle of LA, 4 kids. We birthed some of our kids in the city. It was very, very much not, like, I mean, our neighbors, if they would have known, we're literally giving birth in our condo and, like, by ourselves, they probably been like, what are these people doing? They're crazy. And that's just a prime example of how we are. We're not about following sort of any kind of mainstream reality, which is why 14 years ago we chose to free birth, which is a long time ago. Now it's become, I remember looking, and Gabriel and I sat down and we were looking, okay, you know, I literally put in Google, I remember it was like, people who don't birth with anybody. Like, I was trying to search,
right,
to find what that name was, because there was literally no name for it.
Right.
And, you know, I just said, oh, by ourselves, you know. And we, you know, we made it work because we were united on the decision, you know.
Yes.
But going back to that story a little bit, I went to Gabriel when I found out I was pregnant, and I said, you know, we're going to do this free birthing, or not free birthing. We're going to do this birthing. Now we call it free birthing, but we're going to do this birthing. We're going to do it on our own. It's going to be beautiful. And he's like, okay, I'm in. And, I didn't know what a midwife was. I really didn't, because I never researched what it would look like not to have a baby in a hospital. And then I found out, okay, this is what a midwife is, because I had friends tell me, oh, maybe you want to use a midwife because that might be a better idea than doing it on your own. And we were just like, no, no, we're good. So we kind of kept it a secret.
Mm-hmm.
It was very, a tight-knit group of people knew that we were going to free birth because we did not want projections from the outside world that it wasn't going to be okay.
So important.
Right, because you need to stay strong and in your conviction of your choice, because then if you don't, then other projections can come in, and then everything kind of can blow up in your face if you're not strong enough in that reality. But Gabriel held his specialty, I feel, has always been just holding space and allowing the space to organically unfold.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we didn't, there was no sort of, our relationship was all very much organic and not like the norm. We got married fast. We met quickly. We got married fast. We got pregnant fast. We went into the relationship kind of head on, sort of jumped in, and things just manifested really quickly.
Yeah.
But we, sort of the foundation of our relationship was that we were always in open communication, and we were not afraid generally to look at ourselves and, you know, what it is that we were experiencing with inside of the relationship.
Yeah.
because, you know, he had his wounds. He's, you know, we still have different wounds that come up, but, you know, he had his at the time, I had mine. Mm-hmm. And, but we never let that get in the way of the decision of how we were going to birth.
Yeah.
That was something that, you know, was just defined. Mm-hmm. And once we made that choice, it was the choice that we made. And then we were just fully focused on that. And so we had issues and things come up, but mm-hmm. it didn't shift us from being able to stay focused on that choice, because it was such a grounded sort of space that we created. Yeah. You know, do you want to talk about that a little bit more?
Yeah, I'm curious to hear, like, yeah, what maybe specifically might have come up in terms of, you know, the exploration or making the choice.
Yeah, I mean, you came from a family that believed in home births.
Right. My sisters both had midwifery births. Yeah. And one of them birthed in a birthing clinic, and then the other one birthed, would like rent the hospital room. Mm. And she birthed in with a midwife in the hospital room.
Amazing.
And so both of them had many, many births before we even got together.
Well,
or before our birth came around.
Yeah, and I came from a C-section birth, and my mom had really traumatic C-sections, and it was all very traumatic.
Yeah.
So I had to clear that wound during my first pregnancy.
How did you do that?
I mean, I remember we were in our apartment, and I'm trying to go back to that moment. We were watching a video. This is so funny. This is how, like, I mean, 14 years ago when we made the choice, we were watching, like, birthing videos.
Yeah.
Oh, and we read a book, and it was literally our Bible for birthing. It was called Sacred Birthing.
Sacred Birthing.
And it was our Bible. Yeah. Like, literally, into birth. Like, yeah, it was all we needed. Mm. It told you the state of mind you should be in.
Mm.
And it spoke our language.
Sure.
You know, it spoke the spiritual realm, the emotional realm. It touched very little on the physical, which was, to us, sounds so crazy. To us, it was the least important part. Yeah. Was, oh, you need to do this thing with the umbilical cord, or yeah, oh, you need to be dilated, or you need... That was literally nowhere in our brains,
yeah, yeah,
in my opinion, in my brain, for sure. It was definitely not in our reality that that's the stuff we needed to focus on.
Right.
So we were sitting there watching... it was like a video.
We were sent a doula who gave us about, like, 6... birthing videos
I
and
love
like
it.
3 or 4 books, and
yeah,
the only book we really read was
Sacred Birthing.
And then we were watching like women giving birth in
Hawaii.
Yeah,
there was an orgasmic birth woman who actually did a free birth, and that was the only one I could find.
Mm-hmm.
And
I know which video you're talking
Amber
about.
Amber was her name, actually. and I was like, I want that.
Mm.
And I didn't get that till my second birth, but okay, so the wound thing, the C-section, you know, we're watching this video, and I remember just crying,
mm,
and I remember he was holding me, and I was like, oh, you know, all this trauma, and it was literally just an organic process. It wasn't anything specific as in, we're going to have to go through this whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
It was, I just had tears coming down for, mm, you know, that little baby me who,
mm-hmm,
was coming out in such a traumatic way.
Yeah.
And I just felt a release.
Mm-hmm.
I was probably 6 months pregnant, and I felt just this peace come over me around my birth, around the trauma that I experienced. He just held space, which is really what he does. He sits in this grounded space, and it almost looked like he's doing nothing because you're like, okay, I need you to do this thing. And then he's just like, I'm just going to let you be present to where you're at. You know, and sort of like, hands off, you stay,
mm-hmm,
here, I'll be here, and I'll hold you, but I'm not gonna shift you, because,
mm-hmm,
you have to walk through this.
Yeah.
You know, that would lead us into our first birth, which our first birth, to track back there, your question, we really didn't have ever a challenge or a question in relation to maybe we shouldn't do this or maybe we should.
It was always a yes.
No, there was never a question.
Yeah.
So that didn't exist in our reality.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I believe. I wholeheartedly believe that's what has to happen,
yeah,
if you're going to have a successful free birth especially, mm-hmm. even a home birth potentially, because mm-hmm. there's no doctor there convincing you you're okay.
Yep.
I mean, a midwife can, I think, you know, tell you things, but when you're at home, you're not in that space where you feel like, oh, a doctor can save me, you know, so... Right. Yep. You know this better totally. than anyone, right? It's like, it's that space that gets created of like safety yeah. in, no, the illusion of safety in the hospital.
It is illusion. Right. Sure.
Yeah. And so when you're at home, surrender
yep.
is, you know, whether it's free birthing on a different level, not to say it's a, like a better, it's just more faith. Totally. And home birthing, you still have to have faith because you're with this midwife who can't sit there and cut you open if they need to, you know, like, sure. And I think in people's heads, that's the worst case scenario
sure.
or death, you know, obviously. Yeah. But, yeah. So we never had a question. We more just processed whatever came up. Like for him, mm-hmm. nothing really, I don't remember anything coming up for you. I just remember me having a few moments of tears, like mm. I was also trying to align, you know, with becoming a first time mother, you're literally aligning with motherhood, mm-hmm. especially when you're younger and you're not, oh, I'm so ready and this is what, you know, this is what I'm destined to do, mm-hmm. and I was trying just to become a mother.
Yeah,
so it was, that was more of my challenge than the birth mm-hmm. process.
Yeah.
So our first birth, was very interesting because there was a point I said I needed an emergency midwife because mm-hmm. I was scared, and I remember him. Oh,
she said to call 1-800-EMERGENCY-MIDWIFE to get me a midwife here right now. And
this was, you know, 15 hours in
yeah.
or whatever it was.
Yeah.
And it was the first. And I remember thinking,
we didn't know, like, details of, like, she kept going into the tub when it was warm, and it would stop her contractions.
Right, and we didn't know that. So that would have been a good detail. This is,
yeah. And so we weren't aware that the warm water could potentially right. do that, and then yeah. it kept happening over and over again. Like, so she would get in, and then she would stop.
yeah.
And then
yeah.
she'd be in it for, like, another 30 minutes, and then she'd get out mm. when the water would get cold, and then we didn't really have any way to get the water out of the tub, so uh-huh. I didn't... and
was,
so, like,
it was quite a process.
We didn't have all the details down of how to keep yeah. a pool hot.
So yeah. there was a moment, you know, where... Yeah, that physical, that detail would have been great.
Mm.
But I just trusted that we would be led, you know, it's that feeling of trusting in life in general, but birth, you know, you're led to what you need to do next.
Absolutely.
So it isn't like the checklist.
Correct.
You know.
It's never a checklist.
Right. It's more of an organic process of being led to what's next, which we did get led to what's next. I said the emergency midwife, and mine and his close friend, he was a life coach, showed up 30 minutes before I gave birth, and he came in and I said, so it, to backtrack a little, he was not holding the space that I wanted him to hold. He was allowing things to just be.
Okay.
And he was just, okay, I'm just gonna sit here and you're gonna, there was not any like support in an emotional sense.
Uh-huh.
He was letting me go through my own journey.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he would say, you know, we'll connect to the baby or connect, mm-hmm. you know, but there was no, but I think that's such a valuable thing to point out, which is the interference at birth.
Yeah.
You know, and he wouldn't do that. And I felt like I needed that.
Mm-hmm.
And there was this balance, but I believe to say that those moments of him deciding not to be what I wanted him to be actually made me stronger, and potentially my next birth and my next birth and my next birth ended up even more beautiful mm. than, because I was in such a, like, there was so much power inside of me around him not stepping in, and it made me walk through doors that I probably wouldn't have walked through.
So good. Such a good point.
And so that's the space he held. Mm. And men, I mean, sometimes they feel they need to come and interfere even in birth. Mm-hmm. You know, a woman who I know who wanted to free birth, her husband sort of tried to interfere with the process, mm-hmm. as in, you know, well, we need to do this. And then when you're in the middle of birthing, and if someone's telling you what you need to do, that can become very uncomfortable.
Mm. Yeah.
So our friend showed up, and I just looked at him and I said, "Am I okay?" And he says, "Yes." And I'm like, "Okay, I think I'm ready to give birth." I mean, it all happened really fast. It wasn't quite as fast as that, but it was about maybe 20 minutes, 30 minutes, something like this. I said, "Okay, I think I'm ready." And I went into the tub and I held his hand, and he just sat there and he held space. You know, it's the quiet kind of like in the corner sort of, you know, if you need anything physical, I'll take care of it. Mm-hmm. And he held my hand, this friend of ours, and the baby came out instantly. It was within, you know, 2 minutes of making that choice.
Wow.
And I was scared, you know.
I think he only pushed like 3 times ending that birth.
Amazing. I mean, literally the pushing was nothing because it was just like...
It was instant.
But all my births were like that. Yeah. When I chose to push, there was no time gap. There was no 20 minutes. There was no... It was so quick because I made the choice. You know, and I think you reach, and you've probably seen this so many times because you've been to many births, you reach a point sometimes, especially with your first, where I think you're like, you're giving up
almost. The desperation. Like,
you're almost, you know, just like that feeling where I can't go on. And then you have to push past that. And I reached that with myself at one point when I asked him for the midwife. But... And,
it's
you know,
like the full circle of the surrender takes place, and then the shift.
The death happens almost.
Absolutely.
Right.
Yeah.
It's like
the death of the. I mean, we could say ego. The death of the.
Yeah.
You know, the death of how.
Walking through the valley of the shadow of death.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And once you cross through that path, then that's like the right away to life.
Right, because sometimes people think when we talk about free birthing that he was such a like. This intricate, he was intricate, yes, but it's like, oh, he must have been like that type of person who just like, yes, he is that type of person who doesn't interfere with my choices, he supports them.
Yes.
And
sometimes I have like little pieces where I'll just have a sentence or two come through that I give her.
It's intuitive
that,
though.
Yes. That gets her to do something.
Right.
But I'm not normally the person like telling her to do anything.
No.
Like it was never that way. It was just like I wasn't even like, I think you should get up and walk. Well, maybe a couple times.
I mean,
it's
when he says something, when anytime he would say something in birth, it would be very intuitive, you know, do this or do that. And then I would do it and then something would come up and
she would get the next piece.
Right. So, he was very hands-off in most of the births. Physically, he set everything up and did the umbilical cords thing and did the, you know, physically, the details he did. But emotionally, you know, I think he, because if someone's there for you trying to constantly, what's the next thing, then you're not, that's not even free birthing. Like, that's not, you're not in a space of freedom at that point. You're right. More contained in a box. Like, he never was, let me check your temperature or like, how many centimeters are dilated. Like, there was none of that happening.
Yep.
Yeah. After the first birth, we had talked about maybe getting the thing to listen to the baby's heartbeat. Mm-hmm. Like, one of those old school ones that you can put down.
Yeah.
I told her, I'm like, I couldn't even work it. I'm like, I'm not that good with physical reality that I can tune into the details that easily.
Right.
It would be outside of my scope of probably being able to process.
Right.
And so I'm...
Right.
Yeah, it's intuition. Mm-hmm. It's so much about intuition. And that's why I say, you know, it sounds so... I go back to this when we talk about, oh yeah, we just made a choice and that's what we did. And it sounds almost like, oh, okay, you just made a choice and then you did this thing. Well... There was so much non-physical, energetic alignment happening that we didn't see when we already had made that choice.
Yeah.
You know, so there was a lot of stuff at play in the non-physical.
Mm-hmm.
And so in the physical, it just was like, yeah, I want to do this. Yeah, let's do this. Da-da-da. Okay, we're doing this. You know?
Yeah.
But we were always committed to our growth as a couple.
Yes.
And most importantly, as individuals. The commitment to our growth... is what even could allow us to make these kind of choices and then follow through with them and then be successful on the other end of it.
Absolutely.
You know, you commit to yourself. Mm-hmm. You commit to one another. First you commit to yourself, then you commit to one another, then you commit to your choices. Like, it all kind of falls into alignment that way.
I love that.
Yeah. After our first birth.
Thank you.
Yeah. After our first birth, we became even more intentional. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't like intentional from the point of like details about the birth, but we started to tune into the baby tone. More. Mm-hmm. And the tone and the feelings of the birth. Yeah. And so we started to like treat our births more like a person would treat a wedding, where mm-hmm. we would plan out like what we felt like the experience the baby would like to experience. And so we would imagine that experience together, and we'd work on it over like several months.
Yes, that is something we did. So it was aligning the energy. Mm. And then how would that translate into physical details? So what does this baby want? And then the energy's here, and now what does that translate into?
Into our world, and how can we set up for it? So and good. So we were very spur of the moment with our second birth.
Well, with the first one, though, I think the tone, it was transformation. Like, if I were to look at the theme of that birth, it was transformation into womanhood.
Yeah.
I felt like a little girl going into pregnancy, mm-hmm. like a very, like, wounded young woman. And so that birth, I believe we discussed this so many times. We said, because that whole pregnancy was constant processing, transformation, mm-hmm. process. That's the other key. You know, it's like these things come up, you're like, oh, wait, that's another thing. Process. I mean, you don't want to be, obviously, it feels like it almost felt like all I did was process my emotions during that first pregnancy.
Yeah.
To align myself. You know? And people don't always do that. That isn't, oh, I'm pregnant, so I need to take multivitamins or whatever, pregnancy vitamins, or I need to go get a stroller. You know, all these physical, whatever it is. Even though those details, sure, some of those details are very important, but, you know, I was very organic about what vitamins I took. Well, what do I feel like I need? Mm-hmm. You know, what does my body need? What does the baby need right now? And so I did make those choices, but those weren't the most important choices I made. It was the emotional alignment.
Absolutely.
You know, and between us. Because look, when we would go through, I'd go through processing, I'd go to him and be, okay, I'm dealing with this thing. And then he would trigger something else. And then we'd end up sometimes in a, you know, in a, what looked spiral. Like a spiraling, you know, sort of energy. But then we would always, we were committed to making it to the other side.
Yeah.
And that is the clearest thing. We go into it, but we're not just going to get stuck in it. Mm. We're going to make it to the other side.
Yeah. Yeah. As a team. Yeah.
How fast we could process became more of the thing.
It became more efficient.
More efficient over time. As our relationship grew. Because at the beginning you would process for like 24 hours, 48 hours.
And then it became maybe like, now it's an hour, you know, or 2 hours, or there, you know, there's a reset that happens, mm-hmm. or 20 minutes, or, you know, it's different now.
Yeah.
And we've been together 14 years. And when we were pregnant with our first, we were together a couple months.
Yeah.
Yeah. We had met at Thanksgiving and then married in January. And then we were pregnant 2 months after we got married. Yeah.
I love it.
And so it was just like,
mm-hmm. The unfoldment, you know, of our relationship, like I said, was very quick. And then our second birth, so it's interesting because the thing that probably people, then you just became kind of this free birthing, you just became free birthers. Well, I never, even at that point, did I identify as a free birther. Like I said, I didn't really even know what that was.
Right.
You know, there was no free birth society or free, you know, there's different free birthing communities now.
Yeah.
And also there wasn't an identity around it for me.
Right.
It was just something that, a choice that I was making versus an identity.
That's an important distinction.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
yeah, we've had a few friends that wanted that experience, mm-hmm. and that experience took on like and more of an ethereal feel than a ground feel. Yeah. And then the pieces didn't come around them to be able to align them to do it. Right. And both of them, we were like, wow, this is going to really be challenging. And both of them ended up with emergency C-sections. Oh, and we knew going into it, we were like, you don't have the support pieces inside of you and around you mm-hmm. to be able to do that. And it was sad for us to watch some of our closest friends.
Because they would come to us at certain points because they're like, oh, wow, you did this thing and that sounds really amazing. Like, we're also people who love to be outside the box. And, yeah. you know, and they would come to me in these conversations and they said, do you think I could do this? And I said, I don't know. I don't think so. Because you're asking the question. When I right. made the choice, there was no question.
No question.
Right. You can't ask the question. You know, if you're asking the question to lead you to your own answer, mm-hmm. sure. But if you're asking the question outside of yourself, trying to get someone to validate
right.
that decision, then there is no... It's going to fall apart unless you do the work.
Unless the alignment happens.
Yeah.
And, right. and you have to be able to feel the alignment. And I think that's a huge distinction for couples. Like, yeah. they really yeah. need to both feel, like, the alignment. Like, this is what we're called to do. Mm-hmm. If not, I don't think they should embark on it. Like, we don't push this on anybody. We no. feel, like, very strongly, like, we only look at the alignment.
It's so important.
Right.
Right. Yeah. And then the...
And there is no magic way.
Right.
Every way that a baby is born is beautiful.
Absolutely.
And every way that... it transpires, works out for the
right. So it's not. Totally. Also, there isn't this perspective inside of us like free birthing is the only way. But at the same time, I wish that for everybody because it is. It, as a woman, it is such an empowering feeling.
Yes.
To go, oh, I just did this. Like you feel like a warrior. You yes. literally feel like you could accomplish anything, absolutely anything, because you've given birth on your own. In a sacred space, you know, by yourself, well, with your partner or whatever that looks like, sure. you know, but by yourself in the sense that nobody is interfering yes. in any way or reassuring. Because I know a lot of midwives, they don't interfere.
Mm-hmm.
Or some may and some don't.
You're
but,
correct.
But, depends. Right, you know this world yeah. better than I do. And for me... when you take that security blanket out,
mm-hmm.
and this is the distinction between, I think, home birth and free birthing.
Yes.
You take the security blanket out of someone being present at your birth to tell you you're okay or not.
Mm-hmm.
There is a level of empowerment that comes inside of you as a woman that you can't gain in with a midwife.
You're totally right.
So that's the distinction.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not to say one's better than the other. I'm just giving my experience
yes.
with it, you
yeah.
know.
It's such an important distinction. And even the interference piece is something
right.
that it should be the primary point when we ask the question, what type of birth do we want?
Mm-hmm.
It should be how much interference do mm-hmm. we really want,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, for sure.
And then...
how much attention do you
yes,
need? How
yes.
much...
Yeah.
Yeah, how much are you really wanting to do it by yourself?
Absolutely. And then and secondarily, I think it would be the alignment, right?
Right.
Is like between the partner,
right.
between... what does the baby want,
right?
Right, the baby. Yeah, we made it about the baby more than
yeah,
us.
Right. I always say that, you know, parents get one vote. Baby gets two,
right.
so right. We
for sure.
we don't
right.
really.
I totally agree
yeah.
with that.
Yeah, and that's where I think that's the other magic between the.
I don't think the first birth, we were fully in tune with what the baby wanted, and I think after the first
right.
birth,
I mean,
I felt like our second birth, we were really,
really
in tune.
She wanted to
yeah.
come to a different state.
Yeah,
she
and
wanted,
so
you know,
6 weeks before our birth, like
moved.
Everything yeah. dried up. And we just moved to Texas for our second birth.
That.
From
and
California,
so
drove.
We drove 6 weeks before. We didn't know where we were going to live. We did
didn't
not
have
know.
A place to birth.
We didn't have a place to birth. Mm. We went to a friend's place.
Fell
and
through.
That place fell through. And then we went to find, like, set off to find a place. And then everything unfolded perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
And it was
so
just.
Beautiful.
We also, key piece to that is we didn't have a lot of money. We didn't have our land.
Sure.
So
yeah.
there was. That piece of trust
mm.
inside of us of, okay, we're now, where are we going to go? How are we going to do this?
Yeah.
And we, once we made the choice.
We may have had $500 or $1,000 moving to Texas in our pocket when we did. Like, we did not have.
You know, and.
We had no way of knowing how we were going to get to where
yeah.
we were going to get to.
It's incredible.
Right,
yeah.
but the baby wanted to be in Texas to be born. So
we
drove.
For sure. Like, it came through intuitively when we were in a Whole Foods parking lot.
Right.
Yeah.
And then we were gone within a day or two.
And I didn't get the name until we got to Texas because the name wouldn't come through in California.
So when you talk about your intuitive processing, I'm so curious to hear a little bit. I mean, this is what you do for a living, right?
I'm an intuitive healer. You're intuitive. Coach. And people say, okay, sometimes it's harder to do it on yourself. As in, well, you know, you can, but it actually generally isn't. Because if you take emotion out of the equation, it's only when I get emotional that I can't see clearly. Because then the intuition literally goes away.
And it's clouded.
And clouded. And you can't see through, is this intuition or is this my emotional turmoil speaking? Right?
Yeah.
I think our love for transparency as a couple adds to that. Because the more you're wanting to be transparent, the clearer mirror you can be for the other person.
Right. Intimacy and transparency were our mottos for our relationship. Literally, it was always this intimacy, transparency. And then communication just came.
Yeah.
Because if you're choosing
communication to be... came through emotion at the beginning.
At the beginning.
You have to get past that emotional spot to the surrender of that moment to be able
and
to get back.
And being transparent, intimate with yourself.
Right.
You know, intimate with one another. Because intimacy, speaking in a you know, a sexual intimate way. We're talking intimate with yourself as in, you know, you're really like seeing yourself, seeing your partner,
knowing, right?
Yeah. And
understanding the moment and understanding your role within the moment and your role within your relationship and what you need for yourself to be able to get clear or what you have to do for your partner to help them get clear, to reconnect.
So the processing looked like maybe mirroring in some ways
It sometimes would look like mirroring as far as in a couple with inside the couple context. Mm-hmm. Yes. Sometimes it was individual, as in, you know, there was the own process, the processes that we each had that we would go through. Or
at the beginning of the relationship, I didn't do very much processing.
No.
And she processed for both of us.
It was hard.
It was very difficult because I would stay so
like I'm okay. It was almost like a
superficial.
You know, I'm good because I'm good because I'm good.
In that moment, I'm playing the good card.
Okay.
And I was choosing to look at the emotional part of me in that moment. And so she would process her emotion. She would point at what I needed to process, and I wouldn't necessarily process that. And then it would have to process out of the space.
Right.
And so she would step up and process.
This is where
it
wasn't a picture perfect. It's not as if, oh, this was this picture perfect relationship.
Sure,
no. The first 4 years I thought I was dying in our relationship because there was pieces of me dying. But here's the thing, and I look at this today, I don't think I would be the coach that I am, the healer that I am, the intuitive that I am, none of that would be as strong inside of me had he not have been such an ass. No.
Well, I felt...
I can relate.
I would say that my role in developing her as a healer, my healing was on hold until her maturity was there to be able to heal me.
It's so beautiful.
And so it was... It was kind of like her rite of passage into healing was being able to heal me. And, of course, that first part was her healing herself to be able to access
because relationships complicate things. Like, when you're all by yourself, right? And, you're on your own journey and you're in a healing journey and everything's zen and I meditate and it's so good. And then you end up, you know, in partnership, you're now... And then you end up with kids that has a whole different... You know, there's these different levels of, you know, you're not working with just your energy anymore. You're commingling with another person's energy, especially if you're choosing to be in real, authentic relationship.
Right.
Not just a superficial, oh, we're just like, you know, we're doing this thing and then we're doing our own thing. And, you know, and that was, you know, authenticity was so big too within the context, but I mean that ties into transparency, but you know that authenticity was, you know, you're really yourself, so you're not putting up, that's such a good piece to talk about, you're not putting up any sort of facades of who you want to present to the other person. We never did that in any capacity. Sometimes I watch people who have been married for even 5-10 years still doing that. And you know, so that's another key to success in relation to free birthing our marriage in general, yes. is when you can be authentic with actually where you are at, yeah. where yeah. he's would, at.
Yeah. For us, I think it looked like, I don't believe you. Mm-hmm. And that for me, if she wasn't believable, she wasn't at her deepest level of truth. Mm. So there's always this.
He was like, definitely had a high standard.
Of like, it's not believable for me yet. I know that's how you feel, and that's what you feel in this moment. It still doesn't mean that that's going to be your right. core piece you need to get through this.
Wow. Right. So there was definitely a lot of exposure.
Back and forth. And all the time. Like,
right.
It was a... That.
But see, that's, again, going back to, it wasn't picture perfect. It was real, though, and that's what you need.
We
you
have
know?
Like several thousand hours of footage that we've been just holding out to share just because it's so bloody. Like, it's just like,
well, and then
it's
we were
like
filming
raw.
Our lives.
It's super raw.
Yeah. yeah.
And it's so like,
I can't wait for it.
we've been wanting to get to a place where we felt like really established, and yeah. then we'd go back and intermingle that into a teaching part of our next life. Like, okay. as we move on, make it relevant. Because drawing the relevance to it is so important.
We did the yeah. work. We were in the trenches for hours and hours and hours and hours. I mean, yeah.
it, we never split each other. We did not leave each other's side.
Because we were recording outside, we decided to take a little break here as we were interrupted by a barking dog. So the next segment is going to start with Christina talking about her births.
So I was called to surrender even more deeply. And I said, okay, if she doesn't come by my mom's birthday, then, you know, I know she's going to be here by my mom's birthday. That was mm-hmm. kind of the conversation. It wasn't even if. It was, I know she's going to be here. And that day, my water broke that night, in the middle of the night, when it turned to my mom's birthday. And that was unusual. So what to the point of this whole process, I kept being called to deeper levels of surrender and trust. Mm. I mean, beyond what I had experienced, because it wasn't what these three other births look like.
Sure.
So you have a vision now of what free birthing looks like.
Yeah.
It's a typical scenario that ends up happening. Mm-hmm. You're creating this vision. And with her, all that kind of went out the window, and there was all these different experiences. Mm. So suddenly I was not in the birthing process after my water had broke. There was no contracting. There was nothing was happening. And I was just sitting there.
And then black and like yellow mucus started coming out of her.
Right. So that was all different.
We were, right. And so that was happening for several hours. And
we called a midwife.
And
she says, because we were.
She says, you have to go to the hospital.
She said the words dead baby syndrome. I laugh now because I'm like, how do you say that? But like, it's so, and I just,
because of the 2 weeks late, and then all of this mucus is coming out of her, and then we're oh like
God. Right we're, and no contractions, no birthing process was happening.
Oh my God.
Very little. And
so she told you she thought your baby was
she said, well, there is such a thing as dead baby syndrome.
Oh my God.
There is such a thing, is what she said. You need to get to the hospital. And
she runs a birthing clinic.
Right. Well, that, you know, and so there was this feeling inside of me mm-hmm. of, in that moment, you know, he asked me, are you okay with dying? Are you okay with the baby dying? And that was such a big question for me, because to me, surrender and death have always kind of went hand in hand, but mm-hmm. figuratively, not literally.
Yeah.
Not my baby's gonna die, you know, right. or I'm gonna really die. Like, you know, there wasn't sure. that, you know, the reality wasn't that ever. Mm. It was, you know, we never got to, there was never that point where you reach the physical death in your face. Mm. And I did. And, you know, I sat with it for a sec, because, you know, I'm sitting there in this birthing process that was so unusual and so outside of the norm. And so it wasn't so not picture perfect, so not what I had even had with the first.
Yeah.
And, I picked a, you know, like, okay, what do I do? Universe, like, there was this process. I just sat still, and what do I do? What do I do? I'm okay with that. And, you know, all this stuff was just happening, and it was a very scattered, and I just got still, and then I picked a card, an angel card, and from a deck, it was Archangel Gabriel, and I looked at Gabriel, and I kind of saw him, and this, there was a pivotal moment where I looked at him and picked the card, looked at the card, his name's Gabriel, Archangel Gabriel, and I just felt the presence of angels around me. Mm-hmm. And I said, I'm going to walk through that door, whatever that question was, I'm going to walk through it. So I'm going to walk through death. And, you know, death for me, death for my baby, whatever that looks like. I'm going to walk through that doorway. And when I walked through it, all the answers came through. Mm-hmm. And I knew what I needed to do. I surrendered on such a deep level where, you know, it's life or death kind of moment. Yeah. And he just held space. He didn't panic. I mean, men, as a partner, your baby's now...
I told her, I'm like, if you want to go to the hospital, I'll support you, I'll drive you, like, right. I'm ready to go. Like, if you feel like that's the doorway, we had to fully embrace that potential of having...
It would have been a C-section.
Yeah.
Because there's no way going in that state. So I just took some breaths, and I just kept hearing... I started hearing my mom's voice in my head. Wow. And she kept saying, walk. We're in this, like... 800 square foot apartment having this baby and with the pool set up in our in front of our altar. And I kept walking back and forth, and that's all I kept getting called. And I said, Gabriel, the baby's coming now. He said, really? Yeah, I need to get in. So I went into the tub. I didn't even have, there was no contract. I could just feel a rush coming of energy, but it was different than I had ever experienced. I went in, said, okay, I need to get her out fast. This is the words that were coming to me. Mm-hmm. Everything was being told to me. I was being told what to do. Amazing. It wasn't like I was trying to figure anything out.
Right.
I got into the tub. Okay, you got to push once, maybe twice. No, once. This was the conversation. Mm-hmm. And I pushed once and she came out. The cord was wrapped around her neck. And, you know,
she was dark blue.
And we started...
She wasn't black.
Yeah.
She was dark blue.
We started unraveling the cord, and I put her onto my chest and started, you know, just kind of, like, connecting with her. Mm-hmm. And then she just started crying, and then she found my breasts and just started, you know, doing her thing. And that was it. And then I just felt... It was so different because all the other births felt like at the end, there was a sense of, you know, when you had that moment when you birth and you're just like, oh my God, like your face, there's a face that happens. You know, the face, like that's ecstatic, but ecstatic. Relieved.
Yes.
Because like, you're like, I did it.
Finally.
Right. Yeah. But like, you're ecstatic. Mm-hmm. It wasn't like that. Mm-hmm. It was this, like, I felt just like I was connected to this higher source, like almost as if I had, there was this feeling of being almost in another dimension. And it was, I connected back in the space, my face, I even think my face was very like grounded. There wasn't a lot of emotion. It was just very focused on receiving. It was very emotionless almost. And it was so different from what I had experienced. And this goes back to, and I've said it before, when I've told this birth story, it makes so many women feel uncomfortable every time I tell this. And you know, the story, it makes the people feel so uncomfortable. Because when I say I embraced my daughter, my child dying... They just look at me like, how could you ever say, like, be okay with that? And, you know, there was no, would have been no guarantee going to that hospital.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah. There's no guarantee in any of it. So.
Right. And I said these words, and I'm like, information isn't always power.
Exactly.
Like, it doesn't always give you, because information gave me the information that I needed to go to the doctor. The information from the midwife would have been, I need to go to the doctor. It isn't always power. Information doesn't allow you to receive, in my opinion, when you get caught up in emotion and when you're receiving that information, it doesn't allow for miracles to happen.
Yeah.
Because then
your brain processes,
right.
And the brain interrupts the intuition.
Right.
And so your ego just kind of like takes over trying to figure out what you need. And that figuring out energy isn't the energy of the receiving.
You become powerless when you get information and something is told to you, and then you react emotionally, then you become powerless. And then decisions get made for you. Yeah. And then miracles are, there is no such a thing.
Sure.
They don't exist in that space.
Yeah.
And
yeah, you're being affected by everybody's else experience and the percentages, and you're being affected by the hospital not getting sued.
Sure.
Or the all of these other precautions are in place for reasons that are outside of your control, and you're just being another person who has to go along with whatever's being projected your way.
Absolutely. That's so true.
Yeah, that birth was a test, and it was the last.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where sometimes people, oh, you're a free birther, you have these magical... Yeah, I did have some magical births for sure, but that last one was... It was such an initiation into to trusting even deeper than I could have ever imagined.
Yeah.
You know, it was facing death.
Yeah.
Facing the death of your child, which is even more traumatic than facing your own death, actually, you know.
Yeah.
And I feel like it was a miracle in the sense that I don't think the physical details were leading us to a picture-perfect birth.
Right.
And how do you go from not having any contractions to pushing this child out in that, like, that doesn't exist?
She said the most pain she experienced was like a cramping on a normal period.
Right.
Mm. And
the
she's
whole
like,
time.
The entire time. And we weren't planning for a pain-free birth. Like, we didn't, we didn't have any, that wasn't part of our birth plan.
Right.
It was like for her to experience something like that.
Right.
And literally, did we know that it was going to come with this whole other set of circumstances that would be even crazier.
So that called for us to also be more synced up.
Yeah.
But we, you know, we already had the base of, and the foundation, you know, but.
We're 7 years into our relationship. We could come.
Seven is pretty special.
Yeah. Honestly, men just need to stay really strong during birth in their, and grounded. Mm-hmm. Really, that's it. Like, they just have to be strong, grounded, connected, present. These are the things that men should be called to do in that moment.
Yeah. Push the woman back into herself to, like, find the answers,
that's,
I think.
That's what I love most about your story is that you asked Christina if she wanted to go.
Right.
You weren't projecting your fear.
No.
I didn't.
And, yeah.
I think it's in our space, we need to make a choice. So once we sat in it for a while, I would push for a choice sometimes.
Well,
but
he
it
made
wasn't...
me face a choice.
Yeah.
Right.
Because I was sitting in...
Because the choice is there in our space because we've already been given this information from a midwife and we haven't chose yes or no. And that sitting in that and spinning in whether or not you're supposed to do something is the part that I would say that sometimes the husband has to move along the choices.
Sure. Yeah.
And like, just like, we need to choose.
Yeah. Right. Without the projection. Though.
Without,
and
yeah.
That's such an important
thing. Yeah, no
the
projections.
The timing.
Never felt
yeah.
That.
Yeah.
It's
and
beautiful.
It's like the moment of knowing how long for that to play out before it
right.
has
how
to
long
shift.
Do you let it happen before you have to make a choice?
Sure.
Right.
You know, and
yeah. But you guys were in sync in the process. And
yeah.
I think that's the...
And intuition, you had asked the question before about how do you, you know, how does that process work?
For you, I know it's different
for
everyone.
For me.
But,
it's getting quiet, you know, and facing what is in the space to face. So whatever emotions you're dealing with, if you're dealing with something, so you have to be really honest with yourself. So you face that.
Recognize it.
Right.
And sometimes it's like verbalizing, I'm feeling like this.
Right.
Like, especially to your partner. And that can release the hold of whatever that is, where you can just process it. Like, just the confession of it definitely brings a new level of clarity where it doesn't always lift in that moment, but it does give you an insight into the next pieces.
Well, because sometimes being just quiet, as in without facing what is in the space, it kind of gives you an illusion of having peace, or maybe having intuition.
Sure.
You know, because you're not asking yourself. So I ask myself, how am I feeling generally, even before I go into, you know, understanding if I'm making a decision in life or mm-hmm. if I'm making a decision just in general, you know, it's if I'm feeling at all off, I have to ask myself, or even if I'm not feeling off, how am I feeling? You know, right. Because then you can gauge, okay, oh, and then you move through that. And then you can get still and actually listen and hear. I mean, over the years, it's evolved.
Yeah.
You know, so there was different things. Now things more naturally happen versus I'm going through a process. It's more intuitive and more organic and more natural. Not like I have to sit down and go into this certain space. Mm-hmm. It's kind of just happening to me.
Sure. Versus yeah, you're more practiced.
Right.
Yeah.
It's about paying attention to what's coming in. And listening, because your awareness gets directed to something, and then behind, once you observe something, behind that observation right. is a piece. Sometimes it's a song, sometimes it's like your child coming to you and telling you something.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, or it's
you're
like,
in a state of receiving
from whatever.
And paying attention, you're not distracted.
Right.
You know?
Right. Yeah.
And sometimes it's like the most, like being led to turn on the TV when you're in the middle of birth. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, that's like the opposite of intuition, because none of our other births we had a TV on except that one birth that we were in joy and then had that extra level of joy of watching her birth simultaneously with being in labor. Like, it was such a magical moment that we're like, this is the craziest thing ever. Like, this is this alignment that this had to happen is just like beyond magic. Like, this, it just made it so extra special.
Yeah. And just like, I have something that, you know, just came through, which is if you're getting caught up in this is who I am or this is what I'm afraid of or this, you start identifying just like you can identify with, okay, I'm going to do a free birth and this is what it's going to look like, and then you hold on to that and you kind of, that's a foundation. You can like you can unconsciously just by saying, oh, I'm so scared because like, and you start feeding into this reality of who you think you are and what, you know, what birthing is to you and how much fear you have around it. And then even though then you go off and maybe do practices, maybe you do hypnobirthing, maybe you do, you're actually not shifting your energetic field. And so things may work a little bit, but until you get really present with the conversation you're having with yourself and what you're creating, it's not gonna, anything you do is just gonna, sure, maybe it'll give you some relief, but it's not gonna have that big impact that you're looking for. If you know, if you're like, oh, I want to have a free birth, or I want to even have a home birth, or I want to have a whatever it is, I don't, you know, that whole idea of shifting your field and moving up that vibrational scale of feeling better has to happen first.
Right.
And creating your reality is super important. And trusting in your destiny. Creating your reality and trusting
hold on
in your destiny.
To it being a certain way.
Right.
I think our last birth really made us embrace the potential of the hospital and allowed us to fully embrace walking through the door of a C-section after having three births. That's
like free birth. Can you imagine, right?
Right.
Like,
having to face that on your fourth birth.
But here's the thing. Here's the deeper thing. You have to, you know, your my mother and I lost my mother at a young age, and she was born on my mom's birthday. There was so much more at play there.
Totally.
And so it was a bigger picture. I process things about my mom that I would have never processed had I not gone through a traumatic kind of birth like that.
Sure.
Traumatic meaning, you know, for me it was traumatic because I'm facing, you know, some people talk about traumatic births in a hospital and this, but, you know, I was in the comfort of my own home going through trauma around, you know, my child dying with no reassurances of anything, you know, except having faith and trusting and then believing that this miracle can happen and then walking through the doorway and then it does.
Yeah. I think that's the thing to be embraced about birth in general is that there is a death that happens always in some capacity. I have a midwife friend that says, you know, nobody gets through this like unscathed in some way. And whether that's emotional or spiritual or something, you know, happening in the physical, that challenges us to a part of us to die so we can evolve into something beautiful and new.
Right.
And I think your, you know, your story is like such a perfect example of that.
Yeah.
So I think you've already answered the question in the entirety of the, you know, context of this conversation. But if someone were feeling pulled to this choice, to the feeling of wanting a free birth and exploring that, what might you advise them to do in terms of their, I mean, aside from all the things that you've advised here and
through your story? I felt that question coming also from the beginning. And the thing that I felt when you said, you know, when I tap into that, get to know yourself. Mm. If you think you know yourself, get to know yourself better.
Yeah.
You know, get to know your, not be afraid to see your darkness even deeper than you've ever seen it before. So whatever you've been hiding, whatever you haven't been allowing yourself to come out, you know, allowing for yourself to see, allow all that to come out. You know, go through a healing, an inner healing process with yourself. I mean, just continue to ask yourself, you know, what is it that I'm still needing to learn? What is it am I trying, you know, what do I need to move through to get to this point of free birthing? You know, especially if you're at all questioning the decision. I mean, if a person is wholeheartedly yes is a yes and I can do this, you're already starting from a good place in that you've made the choice and there's no interferences.
Yeah.
You know, being mindful of if there is.
Right.
You know, so if you make the choice, is there interferences along the way and questions? Because if there is, then you know you're not done processing.
Right.
You know, you're not done aligning yourself with that birth that you're wanting, that ideal free birth.
Absolutely.
Reading Sacred Birthing was so pivotal. I mean, that was so pivotal.
We didn't even make it halfway through the book.
Sure.
Right, at the beginning. Yeah. We didn't we read half of it and then we could feel the rest. It was literally okay, we know what we need to do here, you know?
Yeah.
And having a...
I would say that it has to be something that keeps coming back to you over and over and over again.
Yeah.
And you have to have confirmation every step of the way. And that's why it's not like a choice you would make in your first trimester and then not have to revisit it over and over and over again. Because if it's not coming back to you over and over again, you've kind of solidified an identity that's not your true nature.
Sure.
And if you solidify that identity, you become disconnected from your intuition, and then
you are
projecting what you want, and you don't have the internal alignment.
Right. It's not an idea. It's not an idea. It's an embodiment.
Yeah. Right.
It's not just an idea, I'm going to do this. It's like you've now embodied the process. So you're physical body, your emotional body, your spiritual body is going through whatever it needs to align yourself with that.
I love that.
So my question for you is, what if you are at that pinnacle and you're the woman and your husband's not alive?
Well, yeah, that's what I was going to touch on there.
That was my next question.
You need to throw him out of the picture.
Really?
You do. If he is not aligned with that free birth and he's in that room, he will only stop you.
I totally agree with you. And finding another support person.
Yes. Find a woman.
That would be my advice too.
So, right. Yeah. Like find someone who is a doula, maybe. But some people think, okay, that's still not free birthing. I know I've came across
it. Some people think that is unassisted birth. Right. There's so many schools of thought.
Find a friend who is aligned. Find
I think a family life member coach.
Whatever. I mean, it can be a family member or they could hinder you too, just depending on their alignment.
Yeah. In terms of that's completely aligned.
Right.
And I think
we had so many projections from her family about our choice and very little from my family on the first birth. And after the first birth, we tried to keep it as quiet as possible because we were sharing everything, not knowing. And then every time a projection would come back, we were like fighting it off. And you have to beat that every time.
Yeah,
and that's a lot of extra
energy. That's a lot of energy when you're pregnant and going through.
You don't necessarily need during that time.
Agreed. Right. And if your partner's the one who's doing that and he's with you all the time and going, so, you know, maybe we should No, he's either got to align or get out.
You have to reach a field goal point with him so you can make it through those 10 months. Without the field goal point where he understands his role and he's completely embodying it. And he's like, you have to convince him this is what's best for you. Yeah. And then he has to align with that.
Yeah.
And I think that if not,
he either has you to would be have a yes. To... Or, I mean, sorry. I just had this. He either has to be a yes or he has to be a, oh, I don't know, but I'm willing to get there.
This is your choice.
Right.
Yes.
Right. Or I'm willing.
Yeah.
It's your choice, but then even when it's your choice, if he's not aligning in the space, that's going to be hard in itself, right. Unless he's a good person to just, like, sit in a corner and be like...
But dude, I don't know
but
anybody
who's gonna do that. Who's gonna take care of the physical details?
If you're not fully there, you're not.
Yeah, you have to be fully there. I think, especially for an assisted. Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah,
like it's definitely.
Yeah.
Even for a midwife, I would severely question it. Like,
totally.
If I would not want. I can't imagine a woman having an unsupportive partner in the space, even if the midwife has an assistant and they are, and you have a doula there, just the amount of energy it's going to cause the women in the space trying to hold the space for you is just going to be incredible.
I mean, my advice to any woman, because I've seen the effects of unsupportive partners is to have a supportive partner that's aligned with your birth desires, no matter what.
Right.
And that is the only person who should be allowed in the room.
Right, whether that's your husband, your partner, a friend.
Yeah, and ideally, it is your partner.
For sure.
I mean, 100%, but...
He needs to want to make that choice.
Yeah.
To move through whatever he needs to move through to get to the other side so he can be that for you.
Right.
And if he makes that choice, then absolutely he's a part of the birth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I knew he was for sure...
But I do think that this comes back to his willing to surrender. And I think in most men's case, it's his willing to surrender to his masculine, to go into his feminine.
Not want
to
fix things.
To be in the space.
Sure.
And so I think that's the part where the balance of the masculine and feminine needs to be there for the supportive partner to be in the space.
Okay,
if he's not willing to take orders from a midwife or a doula, something's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if he can't.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he should not be there.
Yeah.
Like, he needs to know his role and his position and the pecking order of that space.
And that's the emphasis, I think, in birth is, like, really trusting mom's power.
Oh, for sure.
Right? It's, like, that's the essence for every man to hold space in that way, is trusting that mom knows exactly what she needs. And you demonstrated that. It's really cool to see.
Yeah, I don't think that... I would say the other thing is him being able to connect to the baby, too.
So that's another good piece.
That, I don't think that I had a lot of that through the birthing process. But when she gave me the information from the baby, I could definitely discern whether it felt real or whether it felt like an illusion. And I think that is the role that the partner can play. So I don't think...
That's really good.
I was getting messages directly from the baby, was I?
No, I don't believe you were.
I don't
but
think I ever
he
did
was also,
the whole process.
You know, allowing me to.
She
just
was
be
just
in that
automatically
space.
Bringing that, and then of course the dreams come. Like most of our names came through dreams.
Yeah,
and,
I mean
and
we.
Besides, and our name for our third baby came before our second baby came. And
we
was,
knew, like, so that's how tuned in you need to be.
It was crazy.
Not need to,
and she's
want
like,
to be.
Yeah.
We didn't even, like, it completely fell out of our awareness until after the baby was born. And we were like, a year ago we had this other name. What happened here? Like, we were questioning it afterwards.
Because she
then,
was a girl, too, and it was Bella Angel.
Yeah.
And so, but she was not Bella Angel, she was Galen.
And then a year later, we have Bella Angel. And so, that was kind of like one of those really weird...
That's so funny. It like fell out of your awareness and then it came back.
I get a little bit... This is a question I'm not sure if you have, but there... I'm like, oh, let me just ask myself a question. But, so, I'm going to challenge a little bit of a thought that comes up for people, which is, you know, everything's happening perfectly. Yes, it is. And... was, you know, I meant to have a C-section because that's how, you know, that was my path. Yes, that can be true in a sense, but I don't believe birthing, that's the organic, beautiful nature of birthing.
Mm.
So the thought that I have in that is, yes, it was perfect because you hadn't maybe processed what you needed to process to have the natural process happen.
Mm-hmm.
And so, okay, yes, it did happen perfectly, but had you maybe have been tuned into whatever had to release inside of you or whatever, you know, challenges you needed to face, then I don't think that it was ever necessary.
Mm-hmm.
So this is where that gets to be a tricky conversation with me, because I guess it's like anything in life, you know, it's always happening perfectly. Yes. And because that's how, yes.
Yeah.
And, but we're also learning. So how could I have, you know, I believe in destiny and creating your reality.
Yeah.
You know, I believe in both. And, but I think I can't get on board with birthing being a C-section, that's a natural thing in any way.
Yeah.
You know, cutting, you know, I mean, but that goes back to my philosophy in life. So this is where I believe in the holistic path most 90% of the time, you know, so.
Yeah. And it usually is that way.
Right.
You know, the introduction of IVF and vaccines and all of the things that change the way we, like, our natural way.
Right. Like, people die and people, like, I mean.
There's all of those aspects.
The natural process.
Correct. Right. So the modern world, I think, does shift things a little bit. But if you look at just statistically, the most recent study, I think, was done by WHO, of all organizations.
Right.
And it was like, still less than 10% of women actually need any kind of intervention at all. That means 90% of women, you know, no morbidity, mortality changes after 10% of women having these interventions. So that means, you know, 90% of women don't really need interventions.
Right. So it's probably something happening in their brains that they're not processing. Like, it's the spiritual, emotional journey that's blocking them.
And too, I think, you know, just the modern world and our culture.
Culturally, yes.
In U.S. especially, you know,
why a lot of people aren't even faced with the choice.
Exactly.
It's just the way it's being done.
It's just the way it's being done.
This is how it's supposed to be done.
Yep. And insurance companies, right? And insurance companies set so much of the pace for how we pay for things, right? Like, so, right, like the option of free birth. When I talk to some women, I'm not even kidding, like, some of them don't even know that home birth is a thing.
Right.
And so that's what I'm saying is, like, even today, some people don't even know that you can birth your baby at home.
Right.
With a midwife or without, right? Like, it.
Right. Yeah.
That's not even a thought to some women.
Right.
Because it's so culturally, like, out of reach. And even the fact that OBs are now the primary care providers during maternal care for almost, you know, every woman in America, right? Mm. As opposed to midwives. You know, you look at the Netherlands and other countries, and it's like midwives are the primary care providers for maternal care. It's just, we're a little backwards in this
country. Right, there's that cultural aspect to it, too.
Yeah. So we're up against a lot of things that I think hinder us, that, you know, keep us from having the births that I think are really possible.
But, right, and that we deserve.
That we deserve.
And our babies deserve.
Yeah, agreed. Mm-hmm. You guys, I am so in love with you. I, like, just, like, love everything about our time. It's been such a short time together, but I know that this was all divinely orchestrated.
Right.
And I'm so excited to see your story get out there.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you. I mean,
thank you.
It's an honor to talk about this, especially with someone who, like you, who has such a... It just feels like you feel my heart and feel our hearts when we speak.
Yeah, I see you guys.
Yeah.
I do. Thank I see you. The love and the divine everything. It's beautiful.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Right, guys? I think that's a wrap.